The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, Vladimir Zelensky has vowed to push Russia to peace as Kyiv marked its Independence Day yesterday. Barry Ward, Fine Gael TD and chair of the EU Affairs Committee, is currently in Kyiv at the moment at the invitation of Verkhova Rada, the Speaker of the Parliament, and he is due to meet President Zelensky later today. He joins me on the line now. Barry, good morning and welcome.
Morning, Pat. Thanks very much.
So, simple question. What are you doing in Ukraine?
Well, the Speaker, as you said, of the Parliament, Ruslan Stefanchuk, has invited the chairs of the European Affairs Committee. There's about 19 from across the European Union, and there's also chairs from Foreign Affairs and Defence Committees. But really, we're here to meet with parliamentarians, to meet with ministers, chairs of committee, and as you say, President Zelensky, really to hear what they have to say about what's happening, about their plans, and about what progress they think can be made under the current efforts. And, of course, at the moment, General Keith Kellogg is here, the US Special Envoy, and he was at the Independence Day celebrations with Prime Minister Mark Carney from Canada yesterday as well. So a lot of international players in Kyiv today and yesterday, but really we're here to talk to the Ukrainians and see what they have to say about the possibility of peace.
Now, Keith Kellogg was given an award by President Zelensky. What was that award?
Yes, there were a number of awards given out yesterday. Most of them were to military personnel, including a number of posthumous awards. That was in Sofia Square yesterday. I was present for that. And really, it's an acknowledgement of the role that he's going to play. I think it is probably more in hope than in terms of his track record, because a lot of Ukrainians are really hoping that he will be able to put some kind of pressure on Putin to come to the table in real terms. But honestly, speaking to counterparts here in Ukraine, I don't feel there's a great deal of optimism that Putin is serious about making peace.
The question, though, of Kellogg, I mean, he would be far more pro-Ukraine than Trump would appear to be, or J.D. Vance. So how Trump will react to an award going to someone other than himself remains to be seen.
Yeah, and Kellogg has been very strong. I was at the U.S. Embassy last night when he spoke at a gathering there, and his words were not minced at all. He's pretty clear. But I would say that from President Trump, there was a very strong and very warm message of support for President Zelensky yesterday on the occasion of Ukrainian independence. But you're right, when it comes to President Trump, it seems it's all about him rather than the process. But in fairness, I think Lieutenant General Kellogg is pretty close to the administration, and I presume he is managing that relationship as well.
Now, we've heard already on this station today the words of Lavrov, who was talking about a meeting between Zelensky and Putin and how they were waiting for an agenda to be agreed. How long is a piece of string? So obviously the Russians are prevaricating. They don't want any summit to happen between Zelensky and Putin, or at least not yet.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And again, here, there is no real belief that Putin wants to actually have a meeting. So they're not anticipating a bilateral between Putin and Zelensky or anything like that. And in fact, in a meeting with some of the committee chairs in the parliament yesterday, they were saying that their concern is that any meetings between, let's say, President Trump and President Putin are actually distracting from the main issue. And their concern is that if Ukrainians feel that there is a deal to be had or that there is peace to be had, given that the ordinary population here has been at war essentially for 3.5 years and under attack for 3.5 years, that any peace would look like a good peace. And then if it doesn't happen, which they think is what will happen with Putin, that he will go to a certain point and then pull back, then that affects morale. It affects, you know, the willingness of people to get back into that defense and fighting framework.
Yeah, and of course, Lavrov and Putin believe that Zelensky is illegitimate as president. I mean, this is one of their mantras, even though it's impossible in a war situation to hold elections with people scattered all over the world as refugees and also people at the front line. Impossible. And yet that's what they push for.
And that's the fundamental contradiction then. So if there were to be a meeting between Putin and Zelensky and a deal were to be done, how could Putin agree to sign a deal with Zelensky, a man who he has consistently said is not legitimate? Now, as you say, martial law is in effect in Ukraine at the moment. It would be impossible to hold elections. And as you say, obviously, a quarter of the Ukrainian population is scattered across the world because of the illegal war of Russia. I understand as well that there has kind of been a tacit agreement between the political parties here that there will still be a 6-month hiatus after any ceasefire and martial law is lifted, before an election will be held, because of all the difficulties as well with Ukrainians living in occupied territories in the east of the country and in Crimea, and how they're going to manage that situation with people abroad as well. So it's a logistically very difficult position to be holding an election, but nobody but Russia is questioning the legitimacy of Zelensky as leader of the Ukrainian people.
Now, the question of pushing Russia to peace, it means that Ukraine has to be confident it can inflict some sort of serious damage on Russian infrastructure. And they've had some successes in recent days.
They have, that's right. And that is also what they would say, is that as much as they will do whatever it takes to achieve peace and to sit down with whomever or whatever that might be, the reality is that they need a strong arm behind them to convince Russia that there might actually be a basis for coming to the table. And at the moment, it's a little bit of tit for tat between Russia and Ukraine. There isn't a feeling that there's any great progress by either side. And there is, I understand from people here, they feel that Putin wants to have a big surge and then to try to settle that those borders, or settle that position, or have what he holds, as it were. So there's a lot of concern about that. But what they consistently say to us is that they need support from Europe and from the United States in terms of military equipment. Now, Ireland obviously is not going to be involved in that, but they do also appreciate the support of Ireland in terms of non-lethal equipment, safety equipment, defensive equipment, and then also the support we've given to Ukrainian citizens living in Ireland.
And we know that Norway, for example, has decided to fund the transfer of defensive systems from Germany to Ukraine. So that is very positive news for them. There's also the development of what they call the Flamingo weapon, which has given them a range, I think, of 3,000 kilometres, which gets them well inside Russia, should they use it. Is there much talk about the Flamingo?
It's certainly something that Vladimir Zelensky and his team are talking a lot about. They feel they need to be able to reach into Russia to have an impact. And Flamingo is one of the ways they do that. Now, I don't profess to be an expert on weaponry or weapon systems at all, but consistently the Ukrainians have said that if they are to have any kind of impact, and forcing Russia into peace or forcing Russia to the table means they have to have an impact, then they have to be able to hit Russia out, you know, inside the Ukrainian borders and well inside the Russian borders and well inside the Russian borders, because otherwise it's just trying to hold the line and trying to defend Ukrainian territory, and they feel they won't make progress if that's all they're doing.
Is there much concern about what will happen after the peace is agreed? I mean, you talk about if it's a stop-start affair, that it might be difficult to motivate people to get back on the front line once they have retreated from the front line. But dismantling the apparatus of war, I mean, there'll be so many weapons, you know, just hanging around Ukraine, whether they're abandoned weapons by the Russians or the weapons of dead Ukrainian soldiers. That must be a concern, that there could be an element of criminal lawlessness that would creep in with the availability of such weaponry.
Exactly. And there's a whole raft of problems that will come with the resolution of this war through ceasefire. So obviously you're going to have thousands and thousands of mostly men returning from the front to their towns and villages around Ukraine. There may be post-traumatic stress disorder for some of them, or even indeed for ordinary citizens in areas that have been occupied by Russia. But as you say as well, those men will be coming back from the front with small arms, for example, and it'll be impossible for Ukraine to account for all those weapons. So I know, speaking to officials here in Kyiv, that one of the things they're anticipating when the peace comes is having to put increased measures into security, policing, crime prevention within Ukraine, just because those weapons will be floating around. But there is a myriad of other problems that are going to come. So even if this war stopped tomorrow and there was a resolution tomorrow, Ukraine is looking at consequences for a generation in real terms.
Now, finally, I should ask you what Ukrainians are saying might be conceded in exchange for a peace. I mean, we've heard J.D. Vance saying that both sides have made concessions in recent days since, I suppose, that famous Alaska summit. What are Ukrainians saying might have to be conceded?
The simple answer is nothing. They don't really talk about what concessions they might make, and I can understand that. You know, they probably, you wouldn't go into a negotiation saying what you're willing to give up. But the reality is, I think that Ukrainians are interested in peace. But if you look at it from a simple national pride and political perspective, they cannot agree, for example, to give up places like Kharkiv or the Donbass region or those regions in the east of the country, or indeed Crimea. And in real terms, for anybody looking at it, that is a very difficult position to maintain. So if you take Crimea, which was annexed by Russia in 2014, that is now populated primarily by Russians or Russian supporters. And so even if Ukraine were to regain that territory in a deal or in a fight, how can they displace the people who are living there without breaking international law in exactly the same way they're complaining about the Russians breaking it here in Ukraine? So there are huge difficulties there. And I think the reality is that whatever solution comes, it's going to require give from both sides. But if you look at what Vladimir Putin has said, it's kind of inconsistent. And he really hasn't talked about giving anything up. And if that's the way he's going to carry on, there simply won't be a deal. Yeah. And it's perhaps indicative of his attitude to the prevarication and drawing the situation out because it's probably advantageous to him.
Yeah, in fact, the number of Russian-speaking people and people who would have supported Russia within Crimea, that was exactly the excuse that Obama gave for doing nothing, even though it was in breach of the Budapest Memorandum, where they all agreed to protect the integrity of Ukraine. Obama said so many Russians couldn't really do anything about that, da-da-da. Anyway, so it goes on. We wish you well with your meeting with Volodymyr Zelensky later today. I don't know whether he'll ask you for something or whether he'll just thank you for coming. But anyway, Barry Ward, TD, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.